Hi, my name is Sandra Lemon, and I'm the development manager for Halo Waypoint and the Halo channel at 343 Industries, which is the Microsoft game studio for the Halo franchise. Today we're going to talk a little bit about the HaloWaypoint.com website, which we've rebuilt over the last year. We're going to do a bit of a high-level overview of the architecture, along with some tips and tricks as to some of the obstacles we bumped into along the way, hopefully things that you'll find useful in your own websites. The first thing I wanted to do is go into a bit of a demo so that you have some context for what HaloWaypoint.com is. So this is the homepage for HaloWaypoint.com. We're currently highlighting a Halo Championship series that's going on. It's a tournament that we run across some of the games. I'm gonna close this real quick. So this is just some of the content that we have on our homepage. This is all heavily driven by a CMS that we'll actually talk through in a bit. And across the top is our header. There's a game section, which goes into some content related to the games that are actually available across the Halo franchise. So right now, we most recently shipped the Master Chief Collection, and Halo 5 Guardians is something that we're working on right now. There's also the Halo channel. This is an app that we built for the Xbox One. This is highlights a lot of the video content that we produce at 343. And there's a community section, and this is probably the most visited section of our website. This is where the forums live. We have a very, very engaged fan base with Halo, and so they come to our website quite a bit to talk to each other and to kind of experience some of the stats from the game. I'll actually show you an example of that in just a moment. We also have a universe section, and this is something that we've invested a lot in. We actually have this Cannon Fodder series. It's kind of a blog where every week we introduce new content. It's very specific to the characters and the weapons and some of the concepts that are in the Halo universe. You can come here and kind of peruse the content and read it and learn about some of the things across the universe. We also have a shopping website, or portion of the website. And this is where you'll find games and toys and just various accessories, and you can actually buy the games here as well. And so we also have a section of the website that's focused specifically on you and all of the Halo gamers. And so there's a profile section which we added in this website. This is where you can come and customize kind of what you're passionate about in the Halo world, and then show some of the stats that you've gotten as you've been playing our games. I'm actually not going to show you my profile page because I'm not a very good Halo player and I would embarrass myself. So I'm actually going to embarrass my development lead instead. So here's an example of the search results page. I'm going to dig into his profile. So here's an example. This is his bio. He's customized. And here's his high-level service record, which is what we call the stats from a particular game. This is his Halo 4 service record. You can see we do some visualizations of the last games that you've played and some of the kill-death ratios, which he obviously needs to work on. And then you can drill in a bit more, too, so you can go see their service record. This is a lot more intensive data that you can look into and kind of learn how to be a better player. And we actually have some single-page applications that we run as well that go even deeper into the statistics. So you click this button and you can actually go off to those websites. Okay, so let's jump back to this slide. So the first thing that I wanted to talk about is kind of where we were before and why we made the decision to build the website. This is a very high-level overview of the architecture that we had before. We actually had a rather complex setup. We ended up having a website that we built in-house that was the www website, and that was something that we used .NET and MVC to build. But we also ended up taking a blog engine, it was blogengine.net in particular, off of the shelf and customizing it to look like our website. So we customized what they used, I think it was an ASP.NET solution, and we customized the header and the total layout to look and feel as if it was just an extension of the www website. And we did a similar thing with forums. We took the YAFNet solution and customized it to look like our website. It was a .NET Forms-based solution. So what ended up happening was we had three standalone code bases, and we had to duplicate a lot of code. You can think of the header as an example. We had to write it multiple times in order to make it look the same. So you would find that you would have bugs in what looks like the same feature, but actually distinct code. We also had the problem of managing authentication across multiple sites. So you would end up in a situation where one user would sign in on one site. We would have to do a silent login as they moved across to the other sites, which created some flashiness in the silent sign-in. So we wanted to see if we could address that as we moved forward. One of the other negatives of this architecture was that pretty much everything was hard-coded. We didn't use a CMS significantly on the site, and so small changes like just updating a game release date when we moved it would require our dev team to stop what they were doing, go write some code to actually change the date and manage a deployment. So we wanted to see if we could figure out how to utilize a CMS more to make the site easier to manage. It also ended up causing us to have three administration tools. So our content editors were having to work within three different tool sets, which is not ideal. The website was also branded to look very much like Halo 4. Which was great at the time when we were really focused on Halo 4, but as we're moving to Halo Master Chief Collection and Halo Spartan Assault, we really wanted to find a way to have the UX look more like 343 Industries and span across multiple games for many years to come. So we wanted to see if we could figure out a way to refresh the UX. It also left us with a set of performance issues. One of the challenges, I think, was that Forums, for example, was very heavily customized in order to accommodate some of the scenarios very specific to us. That meant that we ended up having to deal with some pretty unexpected scale issues as Halo 4 shipped, and it actually ended up going down at some point. And so we ended up having to do quite a bit of re-architecturing of that to accommodate the scale. And we just wanted to make an investment to see if we could have a Forums that could last us again for many years to come. We also didn't have a monitoring solution for the website. That's great for ensuring that your developers don't get woken up over the weekend, but not so great for ensuring that the website stays up. So we wanted to make an investment there. It was also not very fault tolerant. One of the examples we had was the homepage actually was pulling in some of the Twitter feeds for people who were talking about Halo. And it turned out that if people tweeted certain characters, it would actually cause a parsing error and take down an entire homepage. So we wanted to make an investment in fault tolerance moving forward. There was also little consideration for SEO, so we found we weren't, or search engine optimization. So we found we weren't getting the traffic to the website that we wanted to. So we wanted to keep that in mind as we were moving forward as well. So this is, again, a high-level overview of what the website architecture looks like now. We did accomplish having a single tech stack. We have a single website. We're organized using MVC areas. And we have a single way of doing everything. So we have one way of doing error handling, one way of doing logging, one mechanism for authentication. And as you can see here, we actually have a preview environment. The www site is basically just running in another environment with some additional customizations such that our editors can preview the content before they actually publish it into production. We accomplished having a single point of administration, and I'll show you some of that in a little bit. We did a UX refresh, and it's responsively designed for the various devices. We spent quite a bit of time on performance and scalability, and I'll go into that in depth in a moment. We did accomplish a monitoring suite, which turns out to be quite helpful for us having high reliability. We implemented quite a bit of fault tolerance, and we did some search engine optimization. And we'll go into all of this in a bit. So here's a quick look at some of the technology choices that we made. We're a .NET with C# website. We're using MVC. We have some web APIs. CMS, we ended up going with an open source tool called Orchard, and I'll show you that in a moment. We're actually currently running in Azure Web Roles, but we're actively moving over to Azure Websites. That should be done in the next couple of months, actually. And then we use a whole host of Azure offerings to do what we do. Okay. So going back towards the CMS, as I mentioned, we're using Orchard. We actually have a dev team at 343 whose sole focus is customizing Orchard in order to meet our scenarios. One of the things we did to address some of the unique scenarios at 343 is that we built a service API off of Orchard. So if you look at this example here, what you'll see is that Halo Channel, which as I mentioned is an app that runs on Xbox One, is actually calling into our CMS. Our websites obviously are using the CMS, and Halo 5 will even be using the CMS. That meant that we needed to have a single way of representing the content that we were going to be creating, and to also make sure that other people could use it and render it in ways that made sense for their client. So what you'll see as I go to the demo is that the CMS actually represents much of the content in terms of concepts and not widgets. Some of the features of the Orchard CMS were actually to allow for you to create web pages within the system itself, and we chose not to use that and build our own website for the reasons that I mentioned. So here's an example of our preview environment. As you can see, the domain has preview a subdomain. So if you notice, this is slightly different from the page that we looked at earlier. There's this banner at the top. And this is a banner that we add only in the preview environment. And it allows the content editors to configure the page. And so what I'm going to do is go ahead and click Edit Page. And hopefully I'll be authenticated. Okay, so this is Orchard, if you haven't seen it before. And these are all content types that we've created ourselves to represent the data the way that we want them to be displayed on the website. And you can see this is our description. This is for SEO. There's all sorts of meta tags that we can configure depending on what's relevant for this page. And then here's the concept of what we call modules. And these are just many ways of representing different layouts on the website. And content editors can create as many of these as they want. And they really just plug in a couple of areas of text and some links and some pictures. And then we have the views that know how to render the data appropriately across all of the browsers, obviously in our code. And so here's the top one. We call this the hero module. This is the HCS one that you saw at the top of the page, and it has a heading, a description, and some images. But it's very simple. We didn't want the editors to have to know how to write HTML and CSS, and this gives us a high level of quality. We can verify that we've tested all of the various scenarios without having to worry about HTML maybe causing some corruption across the browsers. And then if you jump over to this page, this one is, again, in the preview environment, but it's in the universe section of the website. And this one's slightly different because this one is less layout and more concept. So Master Chief is an entity that we know and love, but he has kind of common sets of information. So he has a name, he has some properties related to him, he has an image, he has a summary, and some background information, and there's a media gallery, et cetera, et cetera. So if I was to want to modify some of his data, I could click into the CMS and go through and modify his data. And as I mentioned, the universe content is actually displayed across multiple clients. So the Halo channel will also consume this data and represent it differently in its client. Okay. So jumping back to the slides, the next thing that we will talk about is the UX refresh and a couple of the things that we did in terms of rendering out on the website. So we are obviously a responsively designed website. We ended up writing our own responsive grid. It's a custom 8-column grid, and it has the ability to reflow left and right. It's actually only about 300 lines of SAS. We use Modernizer to detect browser features, we use progressive enhancements, and we created our own icon web font, which I think is really cool, and we'll check out in a second. First, I want to show you the responsive grid that we created. So this is actually an administration tool. It's something that we created internally only so that our development team could use it as a guideline for when they're creating content and making sure they understand how things flow. So at the top, you'll see a normal flow, and at the bottom, you'll see a reverse flow. This is actually the exact same content on the page. So the element structure is identical. And if you notice in particular, this element A spans two columns, and this is B, and it's on the right. If you look down here, you'll see that B actually comes first and is spanning two columns, and A is on the right. The only difference between the top and the bottom is that there's an extra CSS class applied, which is the reverse class. And this comes in handy for SEO. You want things that are more important to come first. They're not rendering it, they're just grabbing the content as it's laid out on the page. So if you go to the home page, for example, you'll see some of these. So this module here and this module here have the exact same HTML minus the reverse attribute off of the class, actually. So if I change the width of the browser, what you'll notice is that they end up looking identical at a certain width. And that's, again, because of our responsive grid and the reverse flow. And then the other thing that I actually ended up giving you a sneak peek of is our font icon. And so what we did here was we worked with our design team to create our own unique font, which we then download to your browser. And the reason we did this is because we have a whole host of icons that we use across the website that we didn't want to have to render with images. This is much more performant, and it also gives us a higher visual fidelity. We can scale these just like you scale a normal font from any size you want it to be, and the visual fidelity is still excellent. And so I wanted to show you kind of how you would utilize this. So if you take an example here, I can change the background color. I'm gonna go with blue. And I can change the foreground color if I can find it. And I'm gonna go with pink. And so I can use any two colors to customize any of these fonts without having to create new images. So it also increases the turnaround time for development and adding new icons across the site. And as far as the visual fidelity, if you zoom in, I'll show you, you want to catch up with me. Let's see if I can zoom in anymore. Okay, now you start to see some pixelation here in the Facebook and Twitter graphics, which we're pulling directly from their servers. But you don't see any pixelation in ours. Ours looks quite nice, even at this size. Okay, I'm gonna scale back down real quick. All right. So the area that I think we obsess about the most is performance and scalability. And partly that's due to the way that the gaming industry works. It's actually quite unique. The amount of traffic that you see on your properties is the highest on the day that a new game ships. So you really have to know and anticipate the peak scale without really knowing how well your game is going to do. And you have to make sure that your site can stay up when that peak load hits. So if you look at this example here, this graph, you can kind of imagine that this is typical website traffic you would see over the course of a year. This is actually where our website went live. We got a little bit of a spike there. And then one of the games shipped, and we quite significantly had more traffic than we had for the previous year. So thankfully, we did manage to stay up during this time. So I'm going to go through some of the ways that we accomplished that. We ended up using a distributed cache. We rely on it quite significantly. Most of the content from our CMS is cached, and we rely on the cache headers from those services to determine how long the content's going to be cached. We also utilize a dirty cache. In this context, we use the dirty cache to accommodate a performance need. We want to ensure that a user doesn't pay the price in re-requesting fresh content once something has expired. So what we'll do is determine that something has expired, go ahead and return the dirty cache to that user, and then spawn a background thread to go and re-request that content, such that the next user can get the most fresh content. The one challenge with the distributed cache is that there's a delay in the amount of time that something goes live. There's about a 5-minute cache in the CMS and a 5-minute cache for our distributed cache. So you'll see that if we need something to go live at a particular moment in time, we actually have to kind of figure out how to work around those 10 minutes of delays. We spent quite a bit of time doing perf and stress automation using Visual Studio load test. That was kind of a rinse and repeat cycle. We run the test, we find where the bottlenecks are, we get the dev team to go fix it, we run more tests. We used an async and await pattern with task. Pretty typical stuff here. We parallelize all of our requests. One of the unique things that we do is that we do this even on single requests. So the benefit here being that we'll make a request, the thread will complete and go back to the thread pool, which enables us to ensure that we're not bottlenecking on the thread counts. We also use an image polyfill. And one of our developers on our team, Tyson Matinich, actually took a fork of picture fill, and it's available on Git today. And you can go check it out and use it for your own things if you want to. I'll show you a demo of it in a second. Image polyfill, it's pretty typical. You want to send the appropriate size image to the browser that's requesting it. You don't want to send extremely large images to a mobile browser. And then we had one small thing that we added to it for our own scenarios. We do .NET modification and bundling. And then an extra thing that we did to ensure that our performance stays the way that we want it to as we iterate is that we built, we actually instrumented our code with the W3C resource timing API, which is a JavaScript library that's publicly available. We instrumented the code in a way that when the browser is rendering our page, it will determine how long it's taking for things on the page to render. The interactive DOM point is the one that's the most important to us. So it will gather the information and then send it to us where we can then log in into Blob Store and run some reports on it to see how our website is performing across various different bandwidths, across various browsers from different countries. It's really really good information for us to kind of stay on top of the performance of our website. Let's see, I wanted to do a demo of the polyfill. So here's an example of our games page. This is the Master Chief Collection's hero image is what we call it. It's a relatively large image, and it was loaded, I think, 1920 by six, let me look it up. So this image is 1920 by 675. Obviously, if we were running on a phone, we wouldn't want to download that big of an image to the phone. So what we do is use the polyfill. That didn't work. We use polyfill to render an appropriate size image. So as you can see, this one is 800 by 675. Now, the one thing that Tyson did a little bit different than normal image polyfill is if the browser has already been rendered in full screen mode, so say it was here, and we rendered it with the full size image, as we scale down, we don't need to re-request a smaller image. So he's only re-requesting an image if I refresh the page. So here you should still see the 1920 by 675. But if I was to do the normal polyfill, which we do use, here you'll see 20 by 675. It does scale. It does re-request the image as you go from a smaller size to a bigger size. Okay, so jumping back, so continuing on the trend of performance and scalability, an interesting case study, I think, is the forums solution that we came up with. We ended up wanting to rewrite forums. We actually wrote it by ourselves. As I mentioned, forums are extremely used on our website. It's actually accounts for 50% of the traffic on our website. We have very, very active fans. So what we ended up doing was using Azure Table Store as our data storage solution. We chose Table Store because it's cheap for massive amounts of data. It's also extremely fast, and it has seemingly infinite scale and storage, which is really important to us because we wanted to build a website that could last for years for 343. But that didn't come without its challenges. We do have some relational data. So we had to figure out how to work around some of these challenges, specifically sorting and paging, to make sure that we could accomplish the usability and the UI that we wanted while still accomplishing the performance and scale that we needed. We used Azure Search as an add-on to the Table Store. It's doing all of the work for us for our full text search. We recently added a advanced search feature on the website, which made us have to modify our schema a bit in the Table Store, which ended up causing us to realize that there was a slight challenge in Azure Search, which is that anytime you modify your schema, you have to re-index everything. So we wrote a tool that pulls all of the information from Table Store and pushes it back to Azure Search. And we can reuse that from this point forward. We also had to write a migration tool. We had all of these forums from years past on the old website, and we wanted to bring those forward to the new website. So in order to do that, we needed to write a tool. And what we did at the same time was realize that we needed to do some perf testing and scale testing. And so we ended up going down a path of utilizing the endpoints that we created for the website to actually use when users are really creating topics and posts to do the migration tool. So we built what's a migration tool and a perf testing tool in one. So we would migrate all of our posts from the old solution into the new solution via the APIs and perf and scale tests, and then repeat the cycle until we got to the performance that we wanted to. So here's one of the challenges that I mentioned in the last slide. This one in particular is sorting, and I want to show you how we got around this challenge. If I go to the site, I want to show you the challenge that we actually had. So let's find an example. So here's Halo, the Master Chief Collection. And you can ignore the top for now. This is, we have our community team wants to kind of bubble up some of the hot topics to the top, but that's not really the challenge that I want us to focus on. But do notice the last column is last post. So we're sorting these topics by the last post date. So the most recently posted two topics shows up at the top. So this one's from 1 minute ago, 3 minutes ago, and et cetera. And we show 20 at a time, and as you scroll down, you'll see that you run into a load more button. So we've actually already prefetched the next 20 results, so this should load extremely quickly, and it does. And I can continue to do this until, you know, I find exactly what it is I'm looking for. But we don't feel like people really need to have the direct pagination access to, say, the oldest topics in the world. They're probably not very relevant if they haven't been touched in a while. So the way that we accomplish this UI in Table Store is, first and foremost, it's important to note that we put a restriction on ourselves to where we would not do a full table scan. We did this because we wanted to ensure that we could hit the performance numbers that we wanted. So that left us restricted to using the partition key and the row key. And so in order to ensure that we would only ever use those two as our indexes, we ended up using atomic operations with entity group transactions to insert data in kind of sets of two. So anytime a new topic gets created, two rows gets added. One with a row key of order underscore, and then this little trick we came up with, datetime.maxValue minus the last post date. And that's the row that we would choose to use if we were trying to retrieve topics sorted by last post date in reverse chronological order. And then we also insert another row, which is ID underscore topic ID. And this is the row that would have all of the actual topic information in the rest of the columns. And so this is the pagination challenge. This one we did want to have the direct access to pages. So if I show you an example here, this is the latest update from 343 Industries. It's got quite a few replies on it, and as you can see, we do have pagination directly to a series of pages. That's because users who are active in forums typically want to go directly to the last page so that they can start replying to the thread. And sometimes they've posted in the middle of the topics and they want to go directly to a page that has their comment on it. So we knew we had to come up with a solution that was performant, but also enabled us to do this direct pagination. I'll click on it so you can see that we actually did do it. There you go. Okay, so jumping back, this is the table, and again, we're storing data in multiple ways in the table store. We also are restricting ourselves here to only using partition key and row key as the indexes. The topics are stored as order, the posts are stored as order underscore and then an integer, so 1, 2, 3. And that enables us to sort by the post in the date that they were created. And then we do have a post count, one per the entire topic, and then we store the value of the post count. So if there's a 5,000 posts, and that would show up in this column. And then the combination of post count and the page size, which we configure in our code, allows us to determine how many pages are available for that particular topic. This does have one small caveat with it. It doesn't allow us to do hard deletes. We have to do soft deletes. So in cases where a user has deleted their post, we simply display to the user that this post has been removed. It also requires that we manage conflicts, because sometimes you can find that two users are posting at the same time. And so we had to write some retry logic to continue to insert additional times until the transaction commits. Okay. So talking about reliability and availability, it's something that for some reason seems to be a hot topic. So it's important for you to understand our definition of availability and reliability so you can understand how what we did solves for the problems. So availability to us means, is it up? Does it respond at all? It can respond with something that I'm not expecting. It can be an error, but is it available for me to communicate with? Reliability means, is it giving me what I'm looking for? Is it working the way that I expect it to work? And so we try and measure these two separately. The solution we came up with for availability is utilizing synthetic monitoring. So we created some code that wakes up every 5 minutes and pings out to a set of integration tests that we've written that hang off as endpoints on our website. And those integration tests are probably what you think they are. They are tests that go out and call all of our partners, all of the dependencies that we have across our website. There's over 30 of them. And it runs the code, determines if it was a pass or a fail, sends back to the tests that are calling, and then stores the result in Blob Store. And then in cases where it fails, it'll also send us an email so that we can jump on the problem. We also utilize an external service like Gomez or Keynote to ping our service via a browser. That's going to allow us to catch things that these integration tests wouldn't catch. That's things like CDNs not working or images being broken. And that service will send us emails so that we can jump on issues when those are occurring. So for reliability, we actually don't rely on synthetic monitoring. We instead use passive monitoring. And so what that means is that we actually focus less on fixing the issues that occur with the errors that are getting logged. We don't actively wake up my development team when these issues are occurring. So the way we do that is we are very diligent about respecting the status codes. So anytime a web page is written, we make sure that all of the status codes that are returned are valid. For example, if one of the services that we depend on is not working the way we expect it to, our web page will return a 503. That means that our IIS logs are accurate and can be used to determine how reliable we are. And we do that simply by saying, if the status code is greater than or equal to a 500, then that page was not reliably returning what it was supposed to. And we can. We also do have a tool that wakes up and runs nightly that captures all of the 500s and sends it in an email to our development team so they can debug the next morning. And we're actively looking into App Insights and PagerDuty as well, kind of as next steps. And I want to show you the monitoring solution that we've come up with. So this is an administration page that we created on top of our integration suite. It is just a way for us to do development and debugging as things are going wrong in production. As you scroll down, you can see these are just kind of one for one all of the services that we depend on. And I can run these independently, or I can run them all at once. I'm going to go ahead and give it a shot. So as you'll see, everything's looking good right now. Okay. So fault tolerance. We, as I mentioned, are using a distributed cache. And I also mentioned we were doing a dirty cache. But there's a slight difference to how the dirty cache is used for fault tolerance. This is essentially what we do is when the request is made for some content, if it's expired, we'll call out on a background thread to retrieve some new content. If for some reason the service is down or not returning the content that we need, we will continue to leave that content in and continue to serve that to our users until we determine that the service that we depend on has come back up. So that enables us to in many cases, make it seem as if our dependencies never had an outage, and in most cases, our users are never aware of what was actually happening. We spent quite a bit of time working on fallback behavior. So for example, if a web page depends on five services, but one is not working for some reason, we don't want to show a catastrophic error page. We want to degrade the experience and just hide the content that isn't working. We feel like 80% of the content on the page is still relevant to the user, much more so than an error page. So we choose to implement those fallbacks where it makes sense. That, as I mentioned, decreases the number of catastrophic error pages, which goes directly into our reliability measurements. We also invested in what we called a mock infrastructure. Internally, we refer to it as fakes. We built an administration UI again, mostly for development and testing purposes, to enable our team to put the website into various error states. So you can think about it as going back to the scenario where a page relies on five different web service calls. You can go to this administration page, find one of the five services on the page, type in that you want it to be returning a 500 error, and click a button, and suddenly the website thinks that that web service is returning a 500. So you can then go across the website and look at various pages to see how the website is handling that service throwing a 500. And that allows us to do fault tolerance testing much, much easier than it normally is. And then when all else fails, because sometimes things just do go wrong, we try and approach it with some humor. So here's our 500 error page. It's actually not a real 500 error. My dev team has this page that you can get to so you can test the error page. This one is problem detected. Well, this is embarrassing. Looks like we have some problems on our end. I happen to prefer our 404 page. Something's missing here. See if I can get the other one to show up. Oh, come on. There we go. This is my favorite. This is, we call this the Spartan facepalm. and we also put additional content on the page here so that the user, even though they're experiencing an error, unfortunately, they can continue to find things to maybe keep them moving across the site while that error is being worked on. Okay. And we did spend quite a bit of time on search engine optimization. We didn't go down the sexy route of building a single page application like many people are choosing to do nowadays. We do have some websites that are single page applications, but those are sites that are behind authentication, which search engines won't crawl anyway. So it enables us to build a very different experience. But for this website, we wanted to be as available to search engines as possible. So we went down a traditional multi-page application route. And we followed general SEO practices. We used semantically correct markup. We built sitemaps. We used RESTful URLs. We added meta tags so that we show up in relevant ways on Facebook and Twitter. And we spent quite a bit of time on redirects. We went from a very large website to a much different, very large website. We didn't want to lose the search ranking that we had on the old website. So in order to do that, we built a redirect engine that takes all of the users from where they thought they were going in the last website and redirects them to the new location on the new website. And we use the appropriate status codes, a 301 or a 302 in those cases. And we also utilize Bing and Google Webmaster Tools for the site. And so we shipped the website in October. It has done really well for us, and we're all very proud of the work that was put into it. So we had a mini celebration at 343. Here's a picture of the cake. Of course, we were all a little disappointed that the website on the cake wasn't responsive, but we ate it anyway. So I think we're gonna take some questions now. Nothing there. Says they're coming up. So someone asked, how large is the team behind Halo Waypoint? We only have 7 engineers on the team. It took us about a year to build the website from beginning to end. I think altogether, though, with designers and engineers and the test team and our PM organization, it's probably around 15 to 20 people. Let's see what else we got. Do you have a centralized location for site exceptions? In other words, a database. So what we do is we just use our IIS logs for exceptions. So we have a tool that runs every night that goes through our IIS logs and basically just pulls out all of the status codes that are greater than a 500 and pushes that into an email that gets sent directly to the dev team. Any chance the source will be available for this site? Probably not, but I do think that there are areas of the website that we have that are kind of unique and kind of can be componentized and shared. The picture fill is an example. We've looked at doing the responsive framework. What I encourage you to do is to send me a message on Twitter as to what things you see that are interesting to you, and we'll go through the process to see if we can figure out how to share those. Let's see. Did you have to write any additional code outside of Orchard CMS for this website? Or is everything done using Orchard CMS modules, widgets like localization, content management, SEO? Absolutely. So we didn't use the rendering engine in Orchard. Everything that we wrote is in a completely different code base. We did customize Orchard quite a bit, but everything that we consume out of Orchard is via a service API. But there's lots of things that our team has customized on Orchard. We completely created a new paradigm for localization. We're working on a search solution now. There's a whole host of things that we've done to make Orchard meet our scenarios. And we actually work with the Orchard team so that we're making decisions that make the most sense for how Orchard was intended to be designed. And we collaborate quite heavily with them so that they can take advantage of some of the work that we're doing and push that back to the community. What is the name of the test suite you were using when you showed the live test webpage? That's all custom. That's something that our development team built by ourselves. Like I said, we are looking at App Insights. I think it does offer a lot of what we are showing on that page, and that's something that we're exploring ourselves. Do you have a real-time rapid response system that you know right away when there's a problem? That's an interesting one. We're looking at using PagerDuty, but right now what we do is we have kind of a setup with the Xbox organization where emails get sent from all of the code that we have, alerts really, that gets fired when things go down. And that team has a group of individuals who are constantly perusing the alerts and the emails who have our phone number. We actually have someone at 343 who we call the Master Chief. And he or she is a PM who is on rotation for a week. And they have the contact numbers for all of the development team who are on rotation for the various products across 343. So if something goes down, someone in Xbox gets will make a call to the Master Chief, and they will find who is responsible for that service and call them. Did you use a framework for responsive design? So Tyson Matnich, the person who wrote the picture fill, he's actually the developer who wrote the responsive framework as well. We looked at using some of the other responsive frameworks out there, but they didn't offer all of the custom requirements that we had. So we wrote it, and thankfully it wasn't a tremendous amount of code, and I think that's one of the areas that we would look at putting on Git if that was something that a lot of people were interested in. What authentication mechanism is used for the website? We use LiveID, or Microsoft Account, it's called. It's exactly what we were using before, but we only have one website now. Let's see. Do you guys use Scrum? If yes, how is it? Yeah, we use Scrum, absolutely. We follow 2-week increments. Everybody has stand up in the morning, and it's a fairly typical process, especially now that the website has shipped. As you're working on a V1 product or a completely new product, Scrum's a little bit hard to apply. But we do follow Scrum, and we are adding quite a bit of features. In fact, I think we're going to have a fairly sizable deployment in the next couple of weeks. Let's see. What Orchard CMS features compelled your team to use it as the base for your website? So I wouldn't necessarily say it's the base for our website. Again, we didn't use the rendering components within Orchard. But the big draw for me personally to Orchard was one that the Azure team supported it. It's actually one of the CMS that you can choose to use when you're building an Azure website. So that meant to me that they had spent a significant amount of time investing in evaluating Orchard. But also the way that you can create content types and data structures in Orchard was extremely compelling. It was something I hadn't seen before in a CMS. And I'll say Orchard hasn't come without its challenges. There's some limitations in the scalability of Orchard, and it's something that the 343 team is working on with the Orchard community. We've made quite a bit of progress. It wasn't intended to scale across multiple instances, but that's the way we're using it. So we've had to make quite a bit of adjustments there. Let's see, any statistics such as line of codes, classes, files to give a sense of the size of the site that was created by only developers. So I won't give you any particular numbers, but I will say something that I'm kind of proud of. When we went from the old website, we counted the lines of code in that code base. And we moved to the new one, we also counted the lines of code in that code base. It was significantly smaller. And that was something that we were really proud of because the website had many, many, many of the same features that the old website had, but we were able to accomplish it with a much smaller area, surface area, which lends itself to the caliber of developers that we have on the team. And it also ensures that the site is going to be easier for us to manage moving forward. Do you have any automated UI tests, and how often do they run? Ooh, that's an interesting one. So personally, I'm not a huge fan of automated UI tests. I find that the return on investment is not really there. It's we're constantly fine-tuning the UI. We are really, really adamant about having a beautiful website across multiple devices. And so it's important for us to be able to move really quickly. And so the investment that comes with automating the UI test is a bit more than we're willing to invest at this point in time. We've looked into it, and I think that it's something that makes sense when you have a very static website. But for us, it just wasn't something that we ended up going into. Okay, so I'm being told that I can wrap up now. My Twitter tag is SANDRLEM, it's short for Sandra Lemon. Please do feel free to reach out to me and let me know what areas of the site you saw that you're interested in, and I'll work with my team to see what we can get put out on Git. And any other questions that you have as well. We're always looking for ways to do things better, so we're open to any feedback that you have. And one more note, 343 Industries is always hiring, so if you are interested, please feel free to reach out to me as well. Okay, thank you.